Hello and welcome to a special bonus episode of News to Reviews. My name is Zach and I am here with my co-hosts. Yes, the ones who take over the show when Lockie isn't around. We have Aaron.
Aaron,
oh,
how's it going?
The abuse is back. Back oh, I am.
Yes. Thank you so much for joining us.
Happy to be here as always.
And we have Anthony from What Do You Think About This? Anthony, how's it going?
Yeah, pretty bloody well. Yeah, finally the two true third co-hosts unite to destroy Lockie.
The Trinity. The Holy Trinity.
We have him.
All three of us together, we can finally take Lockie down once and for all.
Yes.
Very exciting. Well, this episode is going to be coming out. Let's see. This will be coming out right after New Year's. So, Happy New Year's, everybody.
Happy Christmas.
Yeah. Christmas has already well and truly been. We're starting the year. Hopefully, it was a good start of the year, Tears, and all the best to all of our audience in the year 2023.
Hopefully, nothing's on fire. Hopefully, nothing is currently on fire at the time of recording this. I'm just dooming. I'm jinxing it now. Something is going to be on fire by the time this is recording.
Oh, fire. Yeah, for everyone to know, we are recording this on December 1st, so my brain is definitely nowhere near the 2023 headspace. I still haven't fully comprehended 2022 yet. Holy shit. Oh, December. It's such a crazy month. Oh, my God. Oh, dearie me. Well, look, I'm looking forward to doing this bonus episode because we're going to be getting nostalgic on this episode. We're going to be talking about games that defined our childhood. Oh, I'm stoked to get into this. But before we do, Anthony, where can people find your podcast?
So, regular listeners may recognize this, but for all the new listeners, you can find me at What Do You Think About This Podcast on Anchor, and I always forget the exact name of the Twitter handle. It'll be on Anchor, but I believe it's the initials of the podcast, and then pod on Twitter. Very hard to remember, so it's WDYTAT pod on Twitter. That's where I'll post any updates to the podcast or anytime I'm appearing on this or any other podcast. So give us a look and a follow over there if you're interested in anything nerd related, because that's all me and Jane talk about is nerd shit.
Oh yeah, I've been on a couple of episodes. Get amongst it. It's a bloody good time. I don't know if I'm going to be streaming during this break. I'll probably like throw in a couple of streams here or there. So look to my socials to if you want to know when I will be streaming. You can check out News to Reviews on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Twitter is probably the best place to keep track of everything we're doing. Our Twitter handles at News to Reviews, and that's with a number two instead of the word two. So as I just briefly mentioned before, we're talking about the games that defined our childhood. The games that when we think about the great times we had playing video games as a kid, this is the stuff that springs to mind immediately. We're getting nostalgic. We're doing what Disney's made billions and billions of dollars on and just like enjoying that cheap dopamine from that nostalgia. I'm very much looking forward to getting into this, guys. Now, look, I am the host of the show. You two are the guests, even though you are like the unofficial co-host. So I'll let you guys fight over it. Who wants to get us cracking with the games that define their childhood?
Aaron, you go.
You want me to go?
Yep.
All right. I think this is going to be good. I think we're going to have a very good, diverse lineup here of games.
Oh, I'm excited. Okay,
yeah, so the first one I'm going to pick here was a game that's near and dear to my heart from when I was a young kid. I think I was about 10 exactly when this game came out. And that is Donkey Kong Country on the Super Nintendo. Now, I've played games, obviously, prior to Donkey Kong Country when I was even younger than 10. They were games like Super Mario World, Tetris, and a few other different games, a few side scrollers, but mostly, yeah, a bit of variety there with those. Mario Kart, for instance. Donkey Kong Country came out by Rareware, and when it did, it blew my mind for a couple of reasons. And I think the first reason it blew my mind for is it the graphics were just next level for a Super Nintendo. Like, everything up until this point has been all 2D, and it's clearly 2D. It looks like animation. You could never say, wow, that kind of looks 3D to any of those games. Until Rareware got their hand on the Silicon Graphics development kit, which is the same kit that they used for Jurassic Park back then as well to create some of the dinosaur effects, they were able to render 2D imagery in a 3D model. So they turned Donkey Kong, Diddy Kong, all of the Kremlins and enemies into 3D models. They put them on a 2D background, but then they made that background parallax. So there were three slides in the background. And when you move across the screen, you can see the trees in the jungle at the very back. And then you can kind of see like waterfalls in the foreground of that. And then you also see another background that's closest to the characters. That just straight away, the moment I fired that up and saw that, I'm like, oh my God, this is next gen, when it's close, clearly not. It's Super Nintendo. But I had no idea how they did it. And it was just, I had to play it. And then after that, it became the music that got stuck in my head. The incredible tunes by David Wise, Grant Kirkhope. And when you go to bed at night, you still hear them. Even something simple, which I love as well, is like in Mario, right, you collect coins clearly, and in the Super Nintendo Marios and the NES Marios, the coins are just static. It's a static image on screen, a static sprite, and you just collect them. But in Donkey Kong Country, they made the bananas 3D, so they actually spin in 3D kind of thing. And that was just, whoa, like, what are we living in to see this kind of thing? A 10-year-old anyway.
Yeah. Oh, grabbing a bunch of bananas and then seeing them all shoot up into your banana count. Yeah. There's definitely a satisfaction to that. And I should have known that you were going to talk about Donkey Kong. Like, of course, you talk about it all the time in the chat. Like, I know the name David Wise because of you. I'd never heard of that name until you. It's cool to see that you're so passionate about these. So is Donkey Kong Country your favorite out of the entire series?
Oh, no. They completely outdid themselves with the second one. Like, the first one was, like, mind-blowing, and it defined my childhood. Like, that's why I picked it, because it's one of those games where I was blown away, and I couldn't believe we're living in this era. With the second one, I kind of knew what to expect in the way of graphics, but I wasn't ready for the game design, the level design of the second one, the extra character with Dixie Kong and her moves and what she can do, and the music just took it to the next level in DKC2. It was an improvement in almost every single way. So DK2 is the best out of the trilogy.
It is crazy. I don't know if there's like a game, I guess, that could be similar in the modern generations. Maybe like Your Last of Us on like the original PS3, where it's like, how the fuck are we doing this on this kind of console? Mm. Because genuinely, yeah, the way they actually got Donkey Kong Country and all that on the SNES is just a technical marvel. It's like, how actually did they do this? Yeah. It's a 16-bit console. None of this makes sense. So yeah, no, I understand why as a kid you'd just be like, what? Yeah, it's like crazy to think about.
It was just absolutely next level, like unbelievable stuff back then. And yeah, I couldn't believe something like that could even be possible back then.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, far out. So would it be up there with one of your favorite games of all time as well too? Would you put this in your top 10?
Probably the second one I'd put in my top 10. The first one's great, and I still love going back to DKC. But the second one is absolutely there. They need to remaster those games as well on Switch. They really need to come back and be there. But I would absolutely put it up there for sure.
So did you like get it for Christmas or something like that? Or is this a game that you bought with your own money? Like, how'd you even get your hands on it?
Nah, when I'm 10 years old, I had no money at all. So no, I remember going to a mate's house actually, who lived around the corner from me. And that's when I first saw it. I'm like, oh my God, what in God's name is that?
Yeah, I love that. The childhood stories of like, hey man, have you heard of this game? It's like, what? It's like, oh.
Yep, well, that's exactly.
There was no like IGN back then. So that was how you found out about a game. You either like literally went to a store and saw it on a shelf and thought, oh, that looks cool, and then played it. Or you just had a friend recommend it to you because they know it's good. They've already played it themselves. So yeah.
I would go as far to say that DKC1 was probably the, from what I've seen anyway, in my experience in gaming, probably the birth of 2.5D platformers.
I think it literally is, yeah.
I reckon it was.
I understand it.
I can't think of a platformer before that that did 3D models on a 2D landscape kind of thing. Mm.
There you go, Nintendo pioneering 2.5D and then 3D with Mario 64 as well, too. Mm-hmm. Oh, very cool. Oh, cool. What a cool start to it. Well, Anthony, what's your first game?
Keeping with the theme of platformers that were exposed to us when we were very young, this was a game, if my memory serves correct, although I was very young at the time, so maybe not. I believe my uncle had a PlayStation and he had a bunch of games with it and he was like, I'm done with this. And he gave it to my mum as a gift, being like, your kids will play this. We got a bunch of games. I think we had like Time Crisis and Tekken, like games that like me and my younger brother are like, we have no idea what we're doing, but it's cool. But the game that will always stick with me and my brother, I think, because we used to do the classic, all right, I died, it's your turn, or, oh, yeah. Bro, no, I know how to do this, give me back the controller, was the Crash Bandicoot series.
Lovely.
Absolute classics of the PlayStation era, and probably the only mascot-like platformers that I ever got into, so because a lot of people are like, Jak and Daxter, Ratchet and Clank on the PS2, and obviously earlier, like your Donkey Kong Countries, your Banjo-Kazooies, your even some Super Marios, like that was their games. Mine was always Crash Bandicoot. I love those games. To this day, I still think they're some of the most, like, even if they're difficult and annoying, they are some of the most fun, though. Even today, I think a few months ago, my friends and I were just sitting there like, what do we do? It's like, yeah, just boot up Crash and we'll play it and we'll take turns and see who can get the farthest and, like, have fun with that. And it's just, it's so much fun, like, revisiting and just playing those games. I guess similarly, I can kind of see the evolution of the next level of, like, platformers coming from that game. And as you play each one, that's why I'm going to say the series, because it's not just Crash 1, it's 2 and 3, is you see the evolution of Naughty Dog as a developer handling this 2D platformer into like the new 3D platformer and all these like interesting ideas and like concepts they throw at you. And it's all super fun and engaging. Especially I guess for a little kid, like that just left such an impact on me of, oh my God, what? This is crazy. It's so much fun. And yeah, it's like I said, I loved those. It's even a thing sometimes I do now. It's like, it's that gaming thing of, all right, I died, your turn. And like just passing it between your brothers or your friends or whoever, and just like you make a game out of it where it's like, all right, I beat two levels, like can you? It's like, no. It's like, I died right away. It's like, ha, give it back, idiot. It's like, you don't know the secret to like getting past this part. It's like, I do. Like all that kind of like really fun stuff that like you can do as an adult, but it's so much better as a kid where you're just being little shits like, yeah.
Well, it was a different time as a kid, right? Like one person has a copy of the game, so you go over to the friend's place. But of course, the friend doesn't want to just sit there and just watch you play it. So you just have to take turns. So you come up with a system, which is like either during deaths or fucking a time limit or something like that.
Oh, time limits were the worst. It's like, bro, I'm in the middle of the level.
Yeah, no, it's gonna be on deaths, and it's like if you get a short amount of time, it's because you suck. It's your own fault.
Would you boys go as far to say that like Crash 1 kind of brought in that PlayStation platformer humor that you see in like Ratchet and Clank and the other games moving forward?
100%. I don't think, especially Jak and Daxter, because that was made by Naughty Dog. 100%. I don't think the way the PlayStation positioned itself as this kind of like, whoa, we're cool system in the early days would not be there. And they, sadly, because of the way of games, they positioned themselves away from that a lot. But in saying that, they still do release like Ratchet and Clank, and they're great games even on the PS5 now. And it's like, what was I going to say quickly? Looking at the most recent, the Crash Bandicoot 4, which is made in the style of those classic games, it shows the evolution of what that game was into this modern era of like, you can make a really good and fun game out of the bones of the original series. And I just think that's like, great. Yeah, make more games like this. I love, like, in saying that, I haven't played a lot of them, but like I do love mascot platformers. I just think it's like, yes, because there's so much room for creativity with them. Like, I haven't played them myself, but I want to play the Donkey Kong Country games, especially the new ones, because I hear so much like creativity and fun ideas they do with the characters and the level design. So it's like, I just think there's such a room for creativity that sadly is dying a bit in the way of gruff gunman, angry, brr.
Well, they've been doing these games for a long time now, though, so they've got a solid baseline, and then all they can do is just get creative from there. And you're absolutely right. Crash Bandicoot 4, It's About Time, was such a good game. It's a real shame what happened to Toys for Bob. I think they've just sort of been absorbed into Activision now. They're not like, they're just like working on Call of Duty or something, which is incredibly disappointing, because that was such a good game. But who knows if we're going to get like a number 5 now. And that's extra disappointing because my game that defined my childhood was Crash Bandicoot as well.
Oh, there you go. You guys were worried
this isn't
about
even
the
where I was expecting the overlap to be. It's like my next game I'm going to talk about. So I'm actually a little bit surprised here. But yeah, I fucking adore Crash Bandicoot. Like, the first one came out all the way back in 1996. But I think Crash Bandicoot game that I ever played was Crash Bandicoot 2, which I think was Wrath of Cortex, right?
No, Wrath of Cortex is unofficial 4 from back in the
day. Oh, yeah, sorry, yeah, you're right. Yeah, 2's Cortex Strikes Back, that's right.
Back. And then 3 is Warped.
Warped, that's right. And that was the first one I played, and it was at my sister's friend's house up the street. I remember I was just like blown away. I thought it was so much fun. I think all I'd played at that point was just Sonic on Sega. So I hadn't played like a 3D platformer before, and it was in one of the levels where there's like a image on the ground, and all the other images are normal, but there's this one particular one where if you body slam it, there's like a secret level in there. I'm like, this is mind-blowing. Cool. I just thought it was the coolest shit ever, and I'm pretty sure like from then on I was just nagging my parents to get a PlayStation 1. And a couple of my dad's friends had them, but my dad was never cared much for video games, so it always took so much convincing. But I think it was finally at Christmas I don't remember what year it was, but I was 7, I remember. I finally got my first PS1, and I got Crash Bandicoot 3 Warped, and holy shit, I played the fuck out of Crash Bandicoot 3 Warped. And like you said, Anthony, like as the series progressed, they just added so much shit. Like in that game, within 5 levels, you'll like, you know, you'll go to this like volcano level where you're like riding on a dinosaur. You'll go to the Great Wall of China where you're riding on a little baby tiger playing as Coco. you go to, like, play as Coco and drive around on a jet ski. You have like levels where you're in an airplane. You have levels where you're driving a motorbike. There was just so much variety of stuff that you were doing in this platformer. I just found it completely mind-blowing as a child. I'll never forget, my dad loved playing just the motorbike levels. Like, I showed him the motorbike levels and he had a go. And then he'd be like, he'd see me playing, he'd be like, oh, let me play that level again. He'll play just that level over and over again for like half an hour or something like that.
Yeah.
And I'll never forget, when I was a kid, I didn't really understand how save files and stuff worked. And I was like, I went into the save files on the memory card and I just started deleting them. And I remember there was like this little animation where like the logo would get smaller and smaller and disappear. I was like, oh, that's cool. I'm like, I'll keep doing that. I don't think I should be doing this.
Yeah,
and then
of
course I go to play the game and like all my, the save file's just completely gone. I have to restart all over again. I just remember Dad like coming to sit down to play, and he's like, what's happened? I can't play it. I'm like, yeah, I deleted the save. He's like, why? And I'm like, I don't know. I honestly don't. I remember feeling so guilty as a kid. And I tried so hard to get back up to that level so he could play it again. It is like the epitome of what defined my childhood as a game. It was like the first game I ever got. And I loved all the Crash Bandicoot games. That's all I wanted. Eventually, I think I managed to get 2 somehow. I don't remember. Probably like some kind of birthday or Christmas. Absolutely loved that. Like, you're using a jetpack at one point. If you jump on the fucking polar bear, you get life if you jump on it enough times. There's so much random cool shit in there. I remember Crash Team Racing, I absolutely loved. I remember going over to my friend's place. He lived like literally over the back fence. I'd go to his house, and his dad was a massive nerd, so he had all the PlayStation games, and I remember playing CTR with him a lot. I remember having the conversation with him that probably the people who made the game are the best in the world at playing Crash Team Racing, but then it was him and then it was me because he was a little bit better than me.
I love Sony's marketing back then as well. Like they came out hard with Crash. That was their like breakout. And the marketing back then, I remember seeing a commercial and it was a guy in a Crash. I think I've shared this with you guys, actually. A guy in a Crash Bandicoot costume standing out the front of Nintendo headquarters and he's got like a megaphone and he's like, "I'm coming for you, plumber boy. It's your worst nightmare," and all this kind of stuff. And then security have to get him away.
And you know what, Aaron? Like, Crash, like, I grew up with Sony. Crash is my Mario. For what a lot of people's Mario is, their mascot that defines their childhood, Crash is that for me. I loved Crash Bash. It wasn't even developed by Naughty Dog. I love that game. I played so much Crash Bash. It was like a weird fucking party game.
It's funny that it's funny that you have Nintendo to thank for all of this too, though, because they were teamed up with Sony at one point, about to bring out a console. Then they did Sony bad and went with Philips instead. And Sony are like, "All right, screw it. Let's just bring out the PlayStation instead then. We'll do it ourselves." And they created their biggest rival. Matter of fact, the market leader.
it's so funny to think about that, where it's like, imagine the world if Nintendo didn't fuck over Sony there.
Yeah.
It's like, oh my God. We'd be in such a different landscape, I feel.
Yeah, absolutely. I think we've talked about it on the podcast before. Like, there actually is a few Nintendo PlayStations out there, like just the mock-up build ones,
the
auctioning off.
Incredibly rare, incredibly expensive.
Hundreds of thousands of dollars. They'd probably auction it off with an accompanying NFT. If they do it in 2022.
It's just a Crash doing the dance. Like,
it's crazy stuff.
Oh, God. Crash Bandicoot. It is just pure nostalgia fuel for me. I really wish that we'd end up getting another Crash Bandicoot game, because I thought It's About Time was truly
excellent.
Reckon
you've got a good chance that you will. I mean, I honestly think that if the deal does close with ABK, I honestly think Microsoft will. They need more IP, so they'll go back to what they know people love. They'll fund it.
Oh yeah,
it will come out again.
It's not like it's not like it's gonna make billions of dollars. But it's Crash. People like Crash. You will make money off this.
You get people excited about it.
Maybe Phil Spencer will make it happen just to like spite Sony, you know what I mean? Like, it was their mascot, and now it's going to be owned by Microsoft.
We see a modern day trailer, and it's like updated Crash in the man outfit going, "I'm coming for you, God boy."
God boy.
It's Crash there. He's War getting man. Like it. It's Crash in the ad. Like, it's like a really highly realistic CGI advertisement, and he's getting like a tramp stamp like Xbox symbol tattooed on his lower back, you know what I mean?
And then Bill Gates is like patting him on the shoulder.
Then he turns around and you see there's like a PlayStation logo already tattooed on his chest, and then it just turns around to Phil Spencer and he holds up a cheese grater and goes, "It's time." We're gonna go
time
real
to
dark
get a rash.
With it.
Oh jeez. Oh no.
Yeah, that got dark all of a sudden.
Oh dear me, enough about Phil Spencer cheese grating a tattoo on Crash Bandicoot's chest. Aaron, what is the next game that defined your childhood?
Wow, that was great. So my next game was when we jumped into the 3D era then. So obviously my first was in the 2D era, but with 3D graphics, 3D elements. It's definitely 100% Perfect Dark. So it's another Rareware banger.
Okay.
Like, I know a lot of people say GoldenEye when it comes to like the first person shooter of the 3D era, and I'm not saying anything bad about GoldenEye. I absolutely adore that game and I can't wait for it to come back. But Perfect Dark was the first game that I saw when I went to a mate's house again after school. And everything was advanced. It was just everything's next level. Like, normally when you see a shooter and then you see another shooter that's similar a few years later, it's like, okay, yeah, I can see that's a cool animation that they did, but essentially it's a shooter. It's the same kind of thing. But Perfect Dark was just, no, they took everything about GoldenEye and they absolutely refined the absolute hell out of it. I mean, going all the way back to including double to triple the amount of guns that GoldenEye had, to actually including reload animations. That was not a thing back then on Nintendo 64. Even games before that, the reload animations were like quick and jarry with a lot of games back then. I think Duke Nukem had it and a few other ones. But
there's a lot of just...
Yeah, that's it. Exactly. Like a couple of frames would be... That would be it. Like Perfect Dark went next level. Like every single gun has a different reload. And you'll watch Joanna Dark like pull a clip out, like pull out the bottom of the gun, slip the clip in, clock it back kind of thing. It's a good 3 second animation for a lot of these weapons. There's a gun called the Farsight, which is just unbelievable. It's an alien gun that when you aim down the sights, it goes into like a full futuristic reality where it can see through walls and it will lock onto an enemy through a wall that's like, it looks like heat, like, you know, like the Predator vision. And you'll shoot and it will kill the enemy straight away. So you can imagine the amount of fun you'd have in multiplayer when you've got your mates there and you're running around a level and you're locking on with the far sight and they're dodging these beams coming at them from God knows where. Just, there's one gun back then that you, every gun has a secondary function, by the way, in Perfect Dark, which is another upgrade from GoldenEye. So with one gun called the laptop gun, you can actually hold down B and then fire, and what it will do is throw the gun onto a wall and it becomes a sentry gun. And like mow people down for you kind of thing. And it actually runs out of ammo too. So like you gotta really
fill it
up. That's
awesome. 30 years before Borderlands. Oh my God. That's crazy.
Yeah, this is 2000 we're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
So what I'm getting at here is like, I'm just giving you very small examples. I could keep going on about Perfect Dark's advances that they made for ages, but they just looked at GoldenEye, every element of it, and said, we want to do something better. We want to make it look more futuristic, make it look more like the X-Files, but also kind of like Blade Runner. And we want to update everything. Just really get to the bottom of it. Zach, it had multiplayer, had cooperative mode in the actual campaign, so two of you can play the campaign. It had counter-operative, which I've never seen before. And that's that's where you're playing the main character and your friend just takes control of a random NPC in the level. And your mission then is to try to kill Joanna Dark. And if you get killed, then it just transfers you into another body of an NPC that you now control kind of thing. So it's counter-operative. Like,
that's cool.
Whoa, back on the Nintendo 64. Yeah. Like, what are we doing?
Even, I don't even see people implementing ideas like that these days. Like, in Deathloop, you could play as the antagonist. But she wasn't just a random NPC, though. The way you can just, like, keep inhabiting new NPCs. Oh, maybe there was a Battlefield game on PS2 where when you died, you're kind of, it was like your soul would leave the body of the soldier
and you'd go into another
someone
one.
Else. Yeah. It was like super weird, but they had like a little animation where like the camera would shoot up. That was on PS2.
Yeah.
Like, you know, the next gen console after the N64.
Yeah.
You know, different, obviously, developers, but yeah.
Two other things I'll say just to end my lovely rant about Perfect Dark. With multiplayer as well, you don't even have to have friends playing with you if you don't want to. You can actually set bots for the very first time in Nintendo 64, where you can set bots and you can play multiplayer with them. You can play with a friend and bots. And the thing about the bots is too, that's you great. Had 18 different types of bots to choose from. So there's one that's called like Venge Sim. And Vensim will come after you if you killed them first kind of thing in the game. So Vensim comes after you kind of thing. There's some like sims that do certain things. Like if he killed your mate and then he kills another mate, then he's got to go for the third one kind of thing. So they actually set parameters around each bot as well. And the last thing I'm going to say is the music is just, whoa, my God. Like Rareware absolutely stepped it up again. And just blew it out of the water. You press start in that game in a pause menu, you'll never want to like go back into the game. You just want to sit there and listen to the pause music, which is just an absolute banger.
Fine. So was this another Christmas present for you?
Yeah, Perfect Dark was, yep.
Yeah, nice. Yep. Yeah.
It was so powerful. This game was so powerful that Rareware couldn't even put it on Nintendo 64. They had to give out the expansion pack in the actual game as well to give it more memory to actually play the game. It was that powerful for the 64.
Damn, was it more expensive because of that?
Nah, they still kept it at $100, which was good back then.
Wow, $100. It's crazy to think, people complain about the prices today, but it was bloody expensive back in the day as well.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, every game's always been $100, like up until PlayStation decided to go a little bit higher, but every game has always been $100 all through the ages. Brand new games anyway, day one.
Oh, totally fair. I'd love being able to play with bots in multiplayer. Like, there'd be a lot of times I played a bit of Call of Duty back in like my teen years, and it was fun to like not just play against your mates, but like to populate the map with bots as well too, so you had other sort of stuff to shoot at. There's a bit more stuff going on. It's crazy to think games back on the N64 were already doing that. That's very cool.
Revolutionary.
Oh yeah. I don't think it can be like undersold how like revolutionary Rare was with like almost all of their games, which is a shame because, you know, then Xbox bought them out and did nothing with them and then made them a Kinect producer.
Like,
so it's
like Rareware is my favorite developer. And once you start talking about 2001, the acquisition, it just breaks my heart every time we get to that stage of Rareware's life. It just really does.
When did Perfect Dark come out?
2000. So it was 1 year before the acquisition.
So it was like their last hurrah, basically.
I think it was their final game on Nintendo 64. Yeah, they still worked with they still had a contract with Nintendo though at the time. So they brought out a few games on the GameCube. They brought out Dinosaur Planet on the GameCube, and then they started making handheld games for Nintendo up until around mid 2000s, and that was and they were able to do that because Microsoft didn't have their own handheld, there was no competition, kind of thing.
Yeah.
Which they still don't, so it's a shame they couldn't just keep doing handheld games for... They'd be making Switch games right now if they could. Mm. Oh, dearie me, Anthony!
Speaking
What's
of
your
Xbox?
Next game?
speaking of Xbox, this was a game... So contrary to what I think people think, where they're like, oh, you've always been a PlayStation boy, right? Sony pony. It's like, wrong. For a generation, I was an Xbox boy. I was an X-boy. basically, because my parents were very interesting, I guess, because neither of my parents were super big gamers or anything like that, so they didn't give a shit. Basically, the rule was, hey, we got this console. That's the one you're playing. Don't ask for anything else. You're not getting it. So I think we got given the Xbox as a gift from someone. I'm not sure. Maybe like a combined Christmas gift for the family or something like that. I can't exactly remember. Just a small note, one of the annoying things was that was we got Halo 2 with it. My parents wouldn't let me or my brother play it because we were like way too young in their opinion. So people who are like, I played Halo when I was a kid, I'm like, yeah, I don't get it. I never played it.
Oh, that's devastating. Was Halo M, was it, or something?
It was MA. Yeah. Halo 2 was MA, and I could not. My parents were like, get that shit away from my baby.
Yeah,
and
no, there's
and like,
no
fair,
way.
Fair, but like... It was
How old would
were, like,
you have been at that time?
Oh, I couldn't have been older than like 10. So like, no. And I think it was my mum. My dad may have been like a bit like, oh, come on. My mum was very much like, no. No, like, we're not exposing them to shit they shouldn't be, like, exposed to at a young age. And I kind of agree with that in a sense where I'm like, yeah, maybe don't. there's some things don't.
I feel like parents really don't give a shit these days. Like, there's so many kids under the age 10 just playing Call of Duty. But yeah, I don't think I even played a Grand Theft Auto game until I was about 14, I think.
That's about when my parents were like, all right, just play whatever you want.
Yeah, I was still, like, I remember, like, mum still being kind of funny about it, but then just, like, not really caring. She sort of got that I was mature enough, I guess, at that point. And so it was all fine. Sorry.
But regardless, the game that I would like to talk about, this is one of those games that I think will always hold a special place in my heart and a lot of people's hearts for combining two of my favorite things in the world. Star Wars and Lego. Together at last. The Lego Star Wars, like, original game on the Xbox and PlayStation and GameCube, I think it was on GameCube, is like maybe one of my most favorite, like, cherished gaming experiences as a child. I don't know if I was introduced, actually, no, similar to a lot of these discussions, I was introduced to through a friend back in the day. This would have been, I think, 2004, I think it came out, maybe 5, because it was just after Episode 3 had come out, because that was the big thing. It was like, play the original, 2005, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. And it was on GameCube. Crazy. But yeah, I got introduced this to a friend who was also a huge Star Wars nerd and was like, bro, Lego Star Wars. And it's like, this is a game where a big part of it was the levels were designed for you to play by yourself, but also with friends. Like, every level was designed to work with a multiplayer component. And that was like so crazy back in the day to be like, yeah, this game is designed multiplayer, so you don't have to swap controllers when you die. The point is to play with people. And that, like, really does just add a whole layer to the game where you're, like, you either go to a friend's place or you invite a friend over to yours, you grab your two controllers and you go through the levels.
And they can just pick up and play, right? It's not like you have to, like, pause and add a person. Like, someone can just pick up a controller, jump in, and then they're playing with you.
100%. You could just plug in a controller, press start, and your player 2 takes over the player 2 character. Or if you want to swap the characters because you wanted to be player 2, you could do that as well. And it was just... It might not be the most, like, amazing, like, game, I think, but it's just so fun. And I cherish it, I think, more just because it is that childhood thing of, like, bro, I'm playing with my action figures in a game. Yeah. Like, I can, like, I've always visualized him swinging a lightsaber and cutting the droids. Now I'm actually doing it. It's like, this is crazy. And
so that was one based off the Phantom Menace, right?
It was the free prequels, which are here or there movies. But, like, as a kid, obviously, I just fucking love Star Wars. So I'm like, yeah, more Star Wars.
So this was the original trilogy that you played then, sorry.
It went prequel trilogy, then they made the original trilogy, I think, a year or two later, and then they had the complete saga at the time.
This was just called Lego Star Wars the video game.
It was just called Lego Star Wars the video game, but yes, it was the prequels.
Oh, so it wasn't just the first movie, it was the first three movies.
So you got 30 levels, you got to go around.
Okay,
you got to...
so I've played this then. I've played the Lego Skywalker saga thing that came out this
year.
Last year, by the time this podcast comes out.
You also picked a really good developer there as well, man. Traveller's Tales. They did, before this game, though, they were doing Toy Story games as well on Nintendo 64 and other games. They did Wrath of Cortex on PlayStation as well.
They took over Crash Bandicoot immediately after Naughty Dog, and they released Wrath of Cortex and, I think, Twin Sanity, which are some of, like, the most... highly praised.
Awesome developer.
The only ones that are really highly praised from that era, because the rest of them are kind of eh. But getting, back, just, I'll try and finish this up as quickly as I can, but yeah, I just, it's such a fun game. It's designed to be fun, I think. Mm-hmm. And the main reason I say that is because when you're first playing through it, you've got to play as, like, okay, it's Obi-Wan in this scene, and it's, like, Jar Jar or whatever, or it's, like, Anakin and R2-D2 or whatever. But once you've unlocked all the characters, it's like, all right, I want to be Padme in this scene. I want to fight droids as Padme.
That's
or
cool.
I want to be Jar Jar fighting like Anakin before he turns into Darth Vader. Like, you can just, you play as whoever you want. And it's so toy boxy. I think that's the term. It's like, it's a toy box. It's like, just play who you want to play, man, once you've unlocked them. And that was like... Mm. That was always the biggest thing. I'll say, this is actually where I'll finish it off. The biggest thing for me as a kid was there was always this, like, not rumor, but it was like the schoolyard thing of, like, oh yeah, once you beat all the levels and collect all this, you've got to look for the secret door. It's like, what's the secret door? And it's like, me as a kid, like, on the early 2000s, and it's like, secret door, Star Wars Lego. And, like, eventually I found, like, okay, once you collect all, like, the, I think it's the golden bricks, which are hidden in each level, you unlock a secret door. And it was like a trailer, in a way, for the Star Wars the original trilogy, because it's the first scene of A New Hope where you're Darth Vader and you're attacking the rebel troopers on the ship as you go to collect Princess Leia. And that's how you unlock the final hidden character, which is Darth Vader. And it's like, awesome. As your kid, you're like,
that it's crazy. Is really cool.
Oh, yeah. it was so cool as a kid being like, what?
I'm so glad you picked this game and not Halo 2, because Halo 2 was, in my opinion, the worst out of the trilogy, so I'm glad that you actually got to do this one before Halo 2.
Okay. Awesome.
So good.
Yeah, it's funny, because that's reminding me of in Crash Bandicoot 3 Warped, the first game that I ever got on PlayStation. There was some kind of thing you could do at the menu where you could unlock like a secret demo of Spyro the Dragon, which like realistically, just like what you had, we're just being marketed to. They're just trying to sell us the next thing they're putting out. This is, in this case, it was Sony trying to sell the thing. But as a child, it was mind blowing because it was just like some kid told me, I think maybe my neighbor, I don't remember. They're like, yeah, no, just press L1, L2, R1, R2, left, right, circle, square, square, and then it will take you to the thing. I'm like, no way. And then seeing it take you to the Spyro game, it was just absolutely mind-blowing. In playing the Skywalker saga, I didn't realize that this was this old. I knew it was old, but I thought it was like more of a... Xbox 360 PS3 era game, because there was a lot of stuff going on in the environment. Maybe they obviously would add stuff, it being a remaster as well. But yeah, lots of characters around the environment and a lot going on. Did you pick up the Skywalker saga?
I haven't. It's one of the few games that I'm like, I will pick it up soon, because again, I love Star Wars and I love Lego and I've loved these games. And I've heard that like the remaster, remake / additional games that is the Skywalker saga is like very fun and very faithful, because people love those original games. The only thing is I'd have to play it with like the no voice acting. I'll have no voice acting in my Lego Star Wars game. Get that shit out of here. We're here for grunts, damn it. The grunt was the way of our people. It's like no one talked and made snappy dialogue. It's like, no, it was a lot of just and all that fun stuff.
It's so British back then for developers to do that. Like even Rareware and Banjo-Kazooie, it's all like when they talk and everything. So good.
I'm sure it was like, I'd like to believe the idea was it's you know how like kids when they play with action figures, they can't do the voices of the actors and all that. So they're just like. Like I'd like to believe that was their intention, was like the idea of like, you're playing with action figures, you don't make real voices, you do fake ones.
So good.
That's far a great out. Game. Oh god. It was kind of hard for me to go back to. I think I end up trading in my copy, but yeah, bloody oath. Oh, it's god, I love getting nostalgic over this stuff. Now this is the series that I thought that I was expecting maybe we'd have crossover on. So there you go. Surprise, surprise. It was actually Crash Bandicoot. But my second game, the other game that defined my childhood, it was from the PS2 era. So I can't remember when I picked this one up, but it's Ratchet and Clank 2.
Yep.
In Australia, it was called Locked and Loaded. But the title that most people would know is Going Commando. They love doing their sort of double entendre kind of a thing. I absolutely loved it so much. Like the series in general is one of my favorite series of all time. I was so excited when Ratchet and Clank Rift Apart came out. It was such a good game, and it's because I just have so much nostalgia for this series. I think the first time I ever saw Ratchet and Clank was, like many people, I was at a friend's house. I'd made a new friend at school. He'd moved to Australia from Zimbabwe, and he was a massive nerd. So very, very, very quickly, I ended up becoming friends with him, because it was a bit more limited back in them days. There wasn't as many people who used to play video games. And I remember going over to his house and he just had so many games in there. Lo and behold, Ratchet and Clank 2, Locked and Loaded. And I was just blown away by how it was like a mascot platformer, except it has all these weapons. Not only that, these weapons were super interesting. Like, you know, you got like these sort of standard sort of ones that like shoot machine guns, but then you also have like these turrets that'll shoot out. You'll have this like little Mr. Zircon thing that'll like follow you around, except I don't think it was Mr. Zircon back then. I think they had a different one.
Yeah, I can't remember the name.
Oh, yeah, I can't remember the name of those ones. There was like a gun that shot lava. There was just so many different interesting weapons. I absolutely love Ratchet and Clank, Locked and Loaded. I don't know if I ever actually owned that one. Maybe I did borrow it off him, because I definitely did finish that game. Maybe I did borrow it off him at some point, but I do remember picking up Ratchet and Clank up your arsenal, and I was so fixated on Ratchet and Clank. I loved it so much. I remember I was like in the Insomniac forums, like getting amongst all the information and stuff. I was so over the top, so excited for it. And I remember I got it for Christmas all the way when it came back out back in 2004. Cool. So I would have been like, how old would I have been? Like 12?
A wee back lad. Then,
I remember where we spent Christmas. My uncle has a whole bunch of cabins that he made out in the mountains. So he was nice enough to like lend us one of the cabins to stay in for Christmas. This beautiful cabin made of like real like fucking wood, all this like bloody lovely place. But of course, it doesn't have a TV. Oh. So I am absolutely devastated and distraught that I have this game that I'm so excited to play, but I have to wait like a day or two to play it.
Disgusting.
So I remember we managed to get a... Oh, no, there was a TV there, but it was one of those old ones with like the knobs that you would turn.
Oh.
And I didn't have a PlayStation or anything to play too.
Yeah.
So my parents got my sister's boyfriend to bring around his PlayStation 2, as well as like these like converter cable things that would convert the old style input to like the red, white, and yellow cables. Just so I could play it for like a few hours Day. And I was so happy they did. Like I just wanted to be glued to that screen the entire time. And I absolutely loved Up Your Arsenal. It was so good. But yeah, going Commando or Ratchet and Clank 2 was the one that really stood out to me the most, because it was the first in the series that I played. And like how you could upgrade your weapons and the weapons would change when they'd upgrade was just so cool and interesting to me. I love the characters like Ratchet and Clank, and their sort of dynamic was bloody great. There was like a twist at the end of Ratchet and Clank 2. I still think it has one of the best stories in any of the Ratchet and Clank games, with like the, what were they called? There was the, they weren't Neopets. Neopets was that weird browser game, but they were like these little pets that were like, that turned out to be like an evil plot. It's so cool. I absolutely love the series. It's so
another good. Incredible developer too, though, right? Like especially for the PlayStation era with Spyro, with Resistance, with Ratchet and Clank. The only time these guys dropped the ball was once in 2013 with the first-person shooter Fuse, which was just horrible. I don't even know why we did that. But then straight after that, they did Ratchet and Clank Into the Nexus and Sunset Overdrive, which pretty much was the only good exclusive game on Xbox One. So, and then Sony got them back where they belong on PlayStation. So it's incredible.
And then they dropped absolute bangers in the PS4 generation with Spider-Man after that. And like the Ratchet and Clank reboot, not really.
Oh yeah, the 2016 Ratchet and Clank remake. Oh, that was excellent. I love that so much. And then Miles Morales, and then Ratchet and Clank Rift Apart. Insomniacs has just been knocking it out of the park. And they weren't even purchased by Sony until after Spider-Man came out in 2018, which is absolutely wild to think about.
Yeah, because that's why they were able to make Sunset Overdrive, is because we're not owned by Sony, so if you want to throw money at us to make an exclusive, we'll do it.
Yeah, they'll go wherever the money goes back then.
Exactly. And then nowadays, Sony's like, all right, workhorse, go. Make Spider-Man 2. Make Wolverine. Make the next Ratchet and Clank. Go, you good thing.
I love that series so much. I remember before Ratchet Gladiator came out, I was super excited for it. I remember being in the forums. I was like, I'd message the developers to ask them questions. They actually like responded to me.
Really?
Which was really nice. That's of them. Cool. I remember like the second or third time they responded to me, they were like, oh, you can also find all this information, a lot of this information just in the forums as well.
Oh,
it was very
nice,
clear. Like, they're like, oh, it's very nice they even bothered
look
to
at the forums, dumbass.
Yeah, kind of. Like,
I remember I used to make polls all the time. I'd be like, what's your favorite Insomniac game? Rah, rah, rah. And then I did it so much that eventually one of the people on the forum was like, who's sick of this person, this user's polls they're doing all the time? Yes or no? Oh, dear. I was 14. I wasn't ready for the internet at that point.
Yeah.
But yeah, I just have so much nostalgia for this game, for this series. I just absolutely adore it. And it's so, makes me so happy to know that it's not a dead series. Like, we're probably, we got a Ratchet and Clank game in 2021, and Insomniac's very busy right now with Spider-Man and then Wolverine. Mm-hmm. Which, holy shit, Spider-Man should be coming out by the time this podcast should be coming out this year.
There's no release date, though, is there?
No, it's just 2023.
Yeah.
But they have, recently, it was like in the last few months, someone was tweeting at them being like, what's going on? Like, you know, I'm anxious. Let me know what's happening with Spider-Man. And they were like, no, it's definitely going to be 2023. So we'll see what happens. Who knows? You never know with game development, but Insomniac's been pretty bloody good. Like, they seem to, like, they somehow managed to get Miles Morales and Ratchet and Clank Rift Apart out within 6 months of each other, and both of those games are incredible. So, I don't know what kind of good fucking Adderall they're on over at Insomniac. Apparently, there hasn't been any reports of any like, severe crunch and bad work conditions. So far, so good in that department. But they're doing some great stuff over at Insomniac.
We spoke before when Anthony was talking about one of his nostalgic games there, that British developers have that sense of humor, with the Crash Team. But this is a different situation, though, where this was Insomniac's a Californian-based developer.
Yes.
And they brought the same humor, though, right? Like similar humor to the... other games, Crash games.
I'd say it was you could definitely tell it's a little more American. More in your face, as opposed to, I think, some of the other studios more like, not subdued, that's not the right term.
Subtle, yeah.
Bit more subtle. But I think that worked because it made it like very like, hey, if you're not playing this game, fuck you. It's like, fuck you. It's like, you should be playing this game. Look at this shit, so cool, fuck you. But in saying that, they do have a lot of good, I think, subtle character humor. Like, I've played Rift Apart, I've played a few of the other games. Like, they have really good, like, character humor, which is what I really enjoy.
Awesome.
So, did you play these growing up as well, Anthony, or were you just on Xbox?
That's why you would think this was the game we collided with, but no. I didn't have a PS2 growing up. My brother did when we were older, but at that point, it was his PS2. It wasn't mine, so I wasn't touching it. So I didn't get to play a lot of these games. It's why I missed out on a lot of, like, the Jak and Daxters, the original God of Wars, Ratchet and Clank. A lot of those, like, games that people are like, oh, this defined me as a person, as a gamer. And I'm just here like, yeah, I played Lego Star Wars on Xbox. The most defining moment was when I got Dead or Alive Beach Volleyball 3, and that changed me as a person. Because that's like, oh, this is different. Oh, I don't think I should be playing this, but I'm going to keep playing this.
That's when you realize that, like, narrative isn't important at all when you got that game.
Yeah, sometimes sometimes there's more to games than gameplay, I say.
Physics is all you need.
Coming of age. Like, coming. Anyway. Yeah, no, it was a bit of a toss-up for me. That wasn't meant to be another joke. Toss-up. Between the Jak and Daxter series and Ratchet and Clank. But I think Ratchet and Clank has to win it out for me, just because it's just consistently been an excellent series. The PS3 Ratchet and Clank games are fucking great. Maybe not quite as on point as the PS2 games. The All for One game, I never really played. It kind of, I don't know, looks very gimmicky to me.
That's the one I've always heard, like, about.
Yeah, but for the most part, it's just an excellent series. It's really, really good. The Secret Agent Clank spin-off was very average. I wouldn't recommend that. That was on PSP.
Yeah.
yeah.
Still the best of those PSP spin-offs, though. It's the only one that's, I think, somewhat playable.
Yeah, I played the Daxter one as well, too, and I remember the Daxter one being a little bit better. There was a Ratchet and Clank game on PSP, actually, as well. There was one that actually had both of them. I forget what it was called. Oh, shit.
That was Insomniac, though, was it?
Size Matters.
Size Matters, yes, that's it.
Yeah.
Some of them, I think Secret Agent Clank was. I don't think Size Matters was. Because some of them, because I know, like, the God of War PSP games weren't made by, Santa Monica, but some of them were. Some of the PSP games.
There's just one that was on Vita, and that was Ratchet and Clank Full Frontal Assault.
Yeah.
By Insomniac, anyway, so they must have outsourced
the Vita That's because the Vita could actually handle games.
I didn't know there was an Insomniac one on Vita. I never played that one. There you go. Yeah. There's a Ratchet and Clank game out there I haven't played.
Because it was on the Vita.
Yeah, it came and went and got destroyed by Nintendo.
Oh, look, I don't think I need to play it as well, too. It's got like 64 on Metacritic.
Probably not very good.
It wasn't a very good one. Oh, dearie me. And you know what? Like, just quickly before we go, like, I want to replay the Ratchet & Clank game so bad, like, with trophies. And I know we've had this discussion before.
Oh, if only handsome devil across the hallway had a PS3 you could borrow. If only. But, a dream.
I got to look into doing that during this time period from when this episode comes out, because it'll be the holiday time, so hopefully I can play them. But in Australia, we don't have PS Plus Premium, so we can't play all the PS3 classics and stuff, which and PS2 stuff, which is all on there now. You can play all the old Ratchet and Clank games if you have the highest tier, but not in Australia. Nope. Sorry, Aaron.
Yeah. I was just going to say, like, I'm a retro gamer. I love going back to the past and playing these games, you know, on the old consoles and all of that. Could you guys do that with these games that we're talking about? Could you go back to PlayStation 2, Xbox original there and play these games?
For some of them, yes. For some of them, no. I think I could go back and play probably not original Crash Bandicoot, but Crash Bandicoot 2 and 3, because the original Crash Bandicoot's actually, like, not unplayable, but it's so hard. It's so much harder than people think. And I could 100% go back and play original Lego Star Wars on the Xbox. 100%. If you put that in front of me and gave me a way to play it, I'd be like, I'm doing this for a week. Don't talk to me.
Yeah. I would say, and I totally agree with you as well, number 2 and number 3 of Crash Bandicoot still very much hold up. Because they're very simple games, you know? Mm. Like, it's hard to fuck up. Just jump, spin, get the box, you know what you're doing. Ratchet and Clank, I'd say the first one doesn't hold up very well because they kind of hadn't really figured out how to mix the platforming with the third-person shooting. So wherever Ratchet was facing would be where he would shoot, which is the same way Jack and Daxter worked as well too, which was, it's just not a fun way to play. Whereas in 2, they added a strafe button. So you'd hold L2 and then you could strafe, which made third-person shooting way easier. You could, like, sort of jump around the arenas and pull off really cool shit. But even then, like, going back, if you try to play, like, Ratchet & Clank Rift Apart does not play like that at all. You constantly have your reticule out as soon as you start shooting. So that way it works way better as a third-person shooter. Like, having a holder button to strafe, like, you would never do that in a modern game. So there's definitely some things that don't hold up with it, but you could, I think I could still play through all 3 and have a good time, but definitely have a far better time with number 2 and number 3. I think at number 3 might even have a third person lock mode on it anyway. So you can play it like a third person shooter anyway. I'd love to play them, and on PS3, if I get to use yours, Anthony, that will have trophies as well too, so I can play the trilogy and it'll be fucking great. Dearie me.
Play it on the Vita. I'm sure that'll be very fun.
you don't reckon it'll work on Vita?
No, it'll work. I'm just like, imagine, like, I don't know. I thought you meant like, I'd stream these. It's like, yeah guys, I'm doing really well. How are you doing?
There's no
way to stream this shit. So I was like,
I won't be streaming these. No way. But yeah, well, that'll do us for this bonus episode of News to Reviews. I got it, guys. That was so much fun getting nostalgic with you. That was such a heavy hit of dopamine. I would have had to buy some very illegal things to get the amount of dopamine I've just had. So that was fantastic. Thank you so much, both of you, for recording with me on this this Thursday evening at the very start of December.
No, yeah, absolutely. Always love being on the show, always love talking about stuff, and yeah, visiting nostalgic games or games that we are nostalgic for, I guess, is like always fun, I think.
Oh, yeah. And I love it. Aaron, like you talk about old games probably more than anyone that I bloody know. So like I couldn't think of a better person to get on the show to get nostalgic with us, my friend.
When you said two games, I'm like, oh, Jesus, two games. Like, I've got a list of about 50. What am I supposed to do here?
Oh, geez.
And even at just two games each, we still managed to go, like, maybe after editing, it might be just under an hour, but around about an hour's time, Oh, dearie me. Now, I won't put you on the spot this time, Aaron, because I did it to you in last week's recording, which will be weeks ago now, when we recorded that episode with Matt. Anthony, do you have any final words of wisdom for our listeners today?
Again, because I said earlier something would be on fire, don't set things on fire over the holidays. It's bad news. Something will happen, and then I'll be blamed for it somehow. It'll be like, oh, the guy with the mustache told me to do it.
That Andrew guy.
Yeah.
Some Andrew guy told me to do it.
Yeah, exactly.
I can look like an Andrew, Anthony. I still think you should change your name to Andrew-thony.
Andrew-thony, the mustache man.
I just like to believe from the Inconsolables, he's just like thinking like, someone's talking about me right now. I can hear it. Some motherfucker's talking about me. What the fuck is he doing?
No, that's very good advice, particularly if you're in Australia. We are very it'll be very dry and hot, so don't light things on fire.
They literally just changed the fire settings again. They'll be like, oh fuck. Oh dear.
Oh, everyone out there, I hope your 2023 has gotten off to a good start. Look after yourselves, and please look after one another.
Ooh, a different sign-off now. Is that for next year?
Zach!
Aaron.
Anthony.
That was weird. I usually say Zachary. I don't know why I didn't.
Yeah, you normally do say Zachary.
I just wanted to do something different, you know? Like, you know, I can't just get stuck doing the same thing over and over again.
Become that spontaneous man.
Oh, you special
man.
Fucking snowflake.
Oh, dearie me.